This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. وحاجه قومه قال أتحاجوني في الله وقد هداني ولا أخاف ما تشركون به إلا أن يشاء ربي شيئا وسع ربي كل شيء علما أفلا تتذكرون وكيف أخاف ما أشركتم ولا تخافون أنكم أشركتم بالله ما لم ينزل به عليكم سلطانا فأي الفريقين أحق بالأمن إن كنتم تعلمون الذين آمنوا ولم يلبسوا إيمانهم بظلم أولئك لهم الأمن وهم مهتدون رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي فالحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. Once again, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. So today I'm going to start talking to you about ayah number 80 of Surah Al-An'am, which is now what Ibrahim alayhi salam is going to respond to when his people argue against him. So when he in the previous discussion declared that he is only going to turn his face towards the one who created the skies and the earth, and he has nothing to do with the shirk that they do, they argued back with him. وَحَاجَّهُ قَوْمُهُ, Allah says. They argued back with him, they tried to make a case against him. The arguments that they made are recorded in other places in the Quran. And inshallah, I want to give each passage its due. So a lot of times in tafsir studies and in explaining one part of the Quran, we quickly jump to another part of the Quran, which is beneficial. But the problem with that is then you're not giving enough attention to the portion you're in. So I want to stay on this passage, give this some due, and then inshallah go to other passages where that is highlighted more. What arguments did they make? How did they respond? How did his father respond? That's captured in other places, not in Surah Al-An'am. Here Allah focuses on his response. He says, أَتُحَاجُّونِي فِي اللَّهِ وَقَدْ هَدَانِي. Are you going to be debating with me about Allah while the case is that He's already guided me? And this is actually a philosophical, really powerful teaching in the Quran about finding طَمَأْنِينَةُ الْقَلْبِ. Like, you know, when I was in university, agnosticism was a big thing, right? So I'm not sure, you know, I'm not saying I'm an atheist, and I'm not saying I'm a theist, I'm saying I don't know, right? So I'm not sure, and that's like the, you know, the pinnacle of agnosticism. I just don't know any better, right? And it's this disconnected approach to reality, because you can just take the safe route and say, I don't know. And the problem was that we, you know, when you study philosophy, all you get are rational arguments for or against the existence of God, and there's kind of this philosophical back and forth. Then steps in new atheism, and especially in the university scene, right? Intellectuals that are making the argument for the lack of existence of God or no evidence for it on the basis of science, that became the new thing, and it's become a pretty dominant theme in many university environments. And actually, by Western academics, there are some responses to that. It's not just that the West is entirely atheist. There are actually some pretty powerful responses from intellectuals in Western society, in American society, Canadian society, European society, that respond to that. It's also important to note that the earliest scientists in European, Renaissance, were actually strong believers in God. Like they, some of their most remarkable work was about science, and other work that they did was about God. Like Newton, about 150,000 pages written about God, for example. You know, so Einstein, a strong believer in God. So there are, you know, early people, even in Western academia and in their intellectual history, that, you know, Muslims tend to assume that they're just about kufr. But it's not that simple, right? But one thing that really struck me, and ayat like these hit a chord with me when I was in university, was that, we're trying to define human beings either as just like computers, rational, right? So you computers or calculators or devices, they calculate and compute an answer, right? And you give the evidence, and here's the answer, black and white, right? Human beings aren't entirely rational. And that's just a fact. Like I was telling you yesterday, you could have a dietitian who has a bad diet. You could have a lung cancer specialist who's a smoker, right? So it's not a rational thing. There are people they know what they're doing is self-destructive, and they're doing it anyway. So there's another component to human beings, which is what the Quran calls the heart. Nowadays, they mask that conversation with emotional health, or the psychological component. And they're trying to define it in different ways. The Quran actually offered a really beautiful, comprehensive picture of what that is. And Ibrahim alayhi salam is alluding to that. The first part of his arguments were rational. That's up here. But beyond the rational, there's something about being grateful to Allah. Notice he said, لا أحب الآفلين. Like he's talking about the existence of his creator, and he shouldn't worship one more than one. He should only worship one. But then he starts talking about loving him. And love is not a rational thing, it's an emotional thing. And what that is it's a combination of both sides of our existence. There's the intellectual side, the aql side, and there's the spiritual and emotional side, which is the qalb side. And they're both fused together in iman. And the Quran is remarkable in that it appeals to the intellect, and it also appeals to emotion. Somebody asked me some time ago, you know, the Quran repeats itself a lot, right? It repeats itself a lot. And I don't understand why it does that. If it needs to tell me something, it could just say it once and move on, right? We're not understanding the two sides of the way the Quran communicates. It's not a science textbook. It's not a math textbook. It's not a history textbook. You know, what nobody asks, for example, when somebody's released a new song and it becomes like, you know, super popular, hundreds of millions of views on YouTube or whatever else, right? And there's a chorus in the song, and the chorus repeats itself, right? And millions of people, really smart people, are bopping their head and repeating the words over and over again. Nobody says, man, the dude already said it. Why is he saying it again? And then he said it again like 15, he said it like 15 times in the same song. What's the issue is, when somebody does that, they're not appealing to your intellect, they're appealing to your emotions. It caught on to you. Something about it influenced you. It impacted you. And the repetition has an effect on you that is beyond the rational, right? So there is, and music, art, these are things that appeal to the emotions of a human being. Sometimes connect with us at a spiritual level too, right? That's what poetry does. So the Quran, the way the Quran communicates is highly rational and philosophical. And at the same time, it's extremely spiritual. And its repetition has that effect. Now what Ibrahim, let's come back to Ibrahim alayhi salam. So he says to them, are you going to argue with me while Allah has already guided me? وَقَدْ هَدَانِي. Which actually doesn't just mean that I'm settled on the intellectual conclusions, but my heart is not at unrest. I'm at total ease. Allah has given me this guidance and I'm settled in my heart. I'm not disturbed anymore. I'm not looking for an answer. And I'm not looking to debate this anymore. It's a conclusion that's given now. I'm okay with it, you know? This was an interesting thing that I had a conversation with one of my colleagues. He and I went to a Quran studies forum at a university, and most of the people that were attending were like, you know, Orientalists, right? And they studied the Quran. They're doing their PhDs in the Quran from a university in Israel or in Chicago or in Australia or in Harvard or in Oxford. They're all from all over the world, and they're all, majority of them, non-Muslims, right? And they're studying the Quran as an interesting body of literature. They're not studying it as believers, right? And we're attending this thing to see what kinds of research are they doing, what are they talking about, that kind of thing. And I was completely comfortable declaring, because they say we approach the text without a bias, right? So we're unbiased as we're approaching the text. And I say openly, actually, you do have a bias, and so do I. You have a kufr bias, and I have an iman bias. And I'm okay with that. I'm perfectly comfortable accepting the premise that Quran is the word of Allah. I've already reached that conclusion. Now what you say can't put cracks in that anymore. I'm settled on that. I can build on top of it, right? I've already arrived at that. So what they have is, anything is possible from their point of view. Anything is possible except one thing. This cannot be a revelation from God. That's the only thing that's not possible. Every other possible theory we can accept, right? So that's clearly a kufr bias, right? So if you can have a kufr bias and call it neutral, well, I'm going to call mine an iman bias and call that neutral, right? So he's Ibrahim alayhi salam is coming to them and saying, you want to debate with me? Well, he's already guided me. You're free to debate. It's not going to shake me. وَقَدْ هَدَانِي. And then they take the next step. And what's that next step? وَلَا أَخَافُ مَا تُشْرِكُونَ بِهِ إِلَّا أَنْ يَشَاءَ رَبِّي. I don't fear anything that you put next to Allah except for what Allah wills. And what's that except for what my Rabb wills? Except for what my master wills? What would he be afraid of? You see, they have these false gods, right? And they say, well, I was reading the other day about Greek mythology and different gods in Greek mythology. And you know what they used to do? Different gods cast different curses on you if you made them angry. Right, so some god came to a woman and tried to have his way with her. She refused him. He cursed her, and now her hair is made of snakes. You know, and anybody who looks at her is going to turn into stone. And another one casts a curse. Nobody will ever believe her. And she tried to warn her people about the Trojan horse, and nobody believed her, and they got destroyed. And nobody will ever. So these gods are just constantly issuing curses. So when Ibrahim alayhi salam refused the idols, I'm pretty sure they came and said, "Don't mess with that one. Oh my God, you will lose all your hair, or this one, you're never going to walk again, and this one, you're never going to have children, or you're going to have deformed children, or you're going to be miserable the rest of your life." They're different curses for different gods. Don't mess with them, right? And he's like, that stuff doesn't scare. These myths, these fantasies you have, they don't scare me. You know, this stuff is not scary. But there is another part that is, in fact, tangible and scary. Because part of what they believed in their shirk is they gave divine authorities to certain people that can cause harm. Like Fir'aun was given divine authority, right? He claimed he's a god. And if you defy Fir'aun, he can kill you. The idol is not going to come and kill you, but Fir'aun can. And the villagers, because of their shirk, can take Ibrahim alayhi salam and mob him to death. So there are some things that are humanly scary about this defiance. So he includes that exception when he says, إِلَّا أَن يَشَاءَ رَبِّي وَسِعَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ عِلْمًا. My master has encompassed everything in his knowledge, in terms of knowledge. أَفَلَا تَتَذَكَّرُونَ. Then why is it that you people make no effort to try and remember? Another very deep thing that Ibrahim alayhi salam says. I'm going to take 8 extra minutes today. You'll bear with me. So he says here, why don't you make an effort to remember? Now the thing is, if he's introducing them to the concept of God and the concept of one God, then he's giving them supposedly new information. Then why is he saying, why don't you remember? Why don't you make an effort to remember? You see, the word remembrance is used when I don't know, when I knew something and I forgot about it. And then I'm reminding you and you say, hey, how come you don't remember? Right? When I'm informing you of something new, I don't say, how come you don't remember? So that word, that phrase by Ibrahim alayhi salam is also very telling. He's telling his people that deep inside your conscience, when Allah created your souls, He put iman of Himself in you. And He had questioned you about His existence before you even came on this earth. أَلَسْتُ بِرَبِّكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَا شَهِدْنَا in Surah Al-A'raf, which is coming in the next ayah. It's like it's answering this question, right? Am I not your master? We all of humanity replied to Allah, in fact, you are our Rabb. And then we came on this earth. And something inside us is seeking that truth constantly. And so what Ibrahim alayhi salam is telling his people is, if you truly try to go into the depths of your own soul, into the depths of your own heart, you'll remember something that's there that you are ignoring when you do the shirk. There's something, it's not new information, it's reinforcement of existing information. And this is by way of a parable what Allah describes in Surah An-Nur when He says, Nurun ala Nur, light on top of light, the light of revelation on top of the light that already exists inside of a person, inside the heart of a person, right? So that's why He says, Afala tatadhakkarun. But now the heavy part, which inshallah I'll spend some more time on tomorrow, but I definitely want to introduce you to it today. And that is, he says, وَكَيْفَ أَخَافُ مَا أَشْرَكْتُمْ. How can I be afraid of something that you create partners with Allah with? The shirk that you've done, the false gods that you've given divinity to, how can I be afraid of them? وَلَا تَخَافُونَ أَنَّكُمْ أَشْرَكْتُمْ بِاللَّهِ. And while you people aren't afraid that you've actually done shirk with Allah, I should be afraid of your false gods while you're not afraid of the true God? وَكَيْفَ أَخَافُ مَا أَشْرَكْتُمْ وَأَنَّكُمْ لَا تَخَافُونَ أَنَّكُمْ أَشْرَكْتُمْ بِاللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ عَلَيْكُمْ سُلْطَانًا. And these mythologies you've created, these are the kinds of shirk you've created that Allah Himself revealed no authority for you to do. This is also telling us something. mythologies like Greek mythology or Norse mythology or Hindu mythology, and in some cases even Christian and other kinds of Jewish mythologies, different kinds of mythologies, they are based on very elaborate storytelling, very immersive storytelling. And when you listen to a story, read a story long enough, you enter this alternative reality. I'll give you a contemporary example. Some kids are really into, or young people, even adults nowadays, are into anime, right? If you're watching an anime show long enough, man, that you're immersed in that universe. You're trying to, like, you know, do a fireball out of your hands in your head, or like you're seeing. So it depends on what show you're into. It's your perception of reality and the imaginary world blurs because you're spending so many hours in it all the time. I remember this is way back in the day. Yeah, 2 minutes, inshallah. Way back in the day, I used to teach at an Islamic school. Some kid was really into Pokemon cards, right? He was spending hours and hours on these cards back in the day. I think they're still around. This is an ancient thing, but they're still around. So he got into a fight with another kid at school. I kid you not, he took out a card and threw it at him. Uh-huh. And he was like, ah! And I was like, what's it? And as funny as it was, it's terrifying because it's made such an impact on his psyche that the line between the real and the imaginary has blurred, right? So as silly as that story is, it's also very telling. What you expose yourself to over and over again can impact your perception of reality, right? And so what he's saying is you can have really deep convictions about this alternative world in which these gods exist and their stories, and you're immersing in them yourself in them all the time. But مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ Sultana, يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ عَلَيْكُمْ Sultana. The truth of it is, if you investigate them, you'll find no basis for them. It's just entirely figments of imagination. And this is actually, my intention was to talk to you about this today, but this will have to wait till tomorrow. فَأَيُّ الْفَرِيقَيْنِ أَحَقُّ بِالْأَمْنِ إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. Then which of the true groups, look at this way seemingly unrelated conclusion. He says, then which of the two groups is more deserving of safety and peace? If you have any idea. So the conversation was about the right belief, but now the conversation is about what? Who deserves peace? Who deserves peace? You know, one of the biggest conversations in the world, as the world heads more and more towards conflict, everywhere you turn, there's conflict. Every viral video you watch is some kind of conflict between people and cops, or between a guy and a girl, or between countries, or conflict, right? And there are people that are talking about how you can achieve inner harmony, and there are apps to calm you down now with flowing water, and you just close your eyes and you can be harmonious for a few minutes and then you can go back to the world of chaos. There's conflict in the world, workplace, conflict in the family, conflict in nations, conflict, political conflict, social conflict, economic, all kinds of conflict all the time, right? And Ibrahim alayhi salam is pointing at something thousands of years ago that the Quran recorded that is the answer to conflict. He says, which of the two groups is more deserving of having peace and safety? Whoa, what's he going to tell us that we have to really contemplate that is the answer to the end of conflict within ourselves and the end of conflict in the world that's around us, right? So we're going to try and explore that, inshallah, in some depth tomorrow. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikr al-Hakim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.